Good morning. It's always a joy to have you joining us for the Word for Life radio ministry. We have so many different types of folks that we have the opportunity to interview and just kind of poke and probe and find out how God worked individually and selectively in their lives. And if we were to have you, our listener, on the broadcast one of these mornings, your own personal testimony would be unique, because God works in special ways to bring us to Christ and then to use us. Well, in the studio again is Bob Chapman, who was with us a couple of days ago. And Bob, you were sharing with us how that the Lord brought you to salvation and you called yourself a cop. Any idea what cop really stands for?
Sure. If you turn the clock back, you look at old pictures of cops, policemen.
Yeah. Okay.
You'll notice that a lot of them have coats that had the double string of copper buttons. And cop came from the copper button. It was just a shortened up. It was not meant as a bad reflection on them. It was just a nickname.
Somebody told me it meant constable on patrol, which sounds good, you know, yeah. but probably not. So the copper buttons, well, that's interesting. So you were a cop. Tell us how you get into that.
I got into that because I had always had, you know, if you look back at policemen, firemen, nurses, you know, people, the common denominator for all of those people, all those professions, are a wanting and a willingness to help people.
When everybody's running out, you're running in.
Yes, sir.
Okay, okay.
And, you know, it's one of those things that there's a terrible, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest, there's a terrible amount of disillusionment within certain professions because of the times that we're facing. And the ravages of society that really wear on somebody and certain professions. And there seems to be a very negative influence or feeling towards the law enforcement community right now, which most guys and ladies who are in it at whatever level take with them even when they leave their job for the day.
Mm-hmm.
It permeates your world. It hangs over your head. And you're always, there's a lot of guys who just can't walk away from that.
Okay. In other words, many times you feel like you're always the bad guy. You're always the person under somebody's suspicion, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, I think that right now, if you look at today's modern day, yes, you're under suspicion. I mean, with the advent of body cameras and the advent of phones and their cameras,
uh-huh.
You feel like people I talk to always feel like they're under a microscope.
Uh-huh.
And I think that in a lot of instances, if the average public saw the truth of what the average man or woman on the street puts up with before they say, I'm sorry, sir, you're going to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
They would be totally shocked. Because all they hear is the one end, or all they hear is about a brutality situation.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying, and cops are human. They're only made in the likeness of Christ. And some of them have, like I've mentioned, I think in a previous broadcast, that they have their own emotional issues. You don't come to work if you've had a disagreement with your wife or your kids.
Right.
In the best of moods.
Right.
Is that
right.
Reflected in your job? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned, I think previously, you know, the problem of alcohol, drug abuse, suicide, divorce are higher in that profession because you do see all that. You do bring it to work with you. You do take the feelings home with you.
Right.
And it permeates your life. And a lot of guys, again, cannot escape
mm-hmm.
that feeling.
You know, we've got a lot of believers listening to us this morning, Bob, that probably are thinking to themselves, wow, I really never thought about really actively praying for our public servants because of the pressures that they're under. But that's really a great idea, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the people In the law enforcement community need your prayers and acknowledgments of thanking them for a job probably more now than they've ever needed it in the history of where we're at, of our country, as far back as you've put together a law enforcement organization, whether it was sheriffs, police departments.
We see people in uniform, Marines, Army, Air Force, whatever, and we have a tendency to say, thank you for your service. Don't really think about doing that for a policeman or a fireman, but we really ought to do that to them as well.
Absolutely, and you know, just a quick reflection on that. When you would go home after an 8 or 10 hour shift, you take off your uniform and you're supposed to be the person next door. Well, you know, the guy next door might have been a supervisor at a local machine shop.
Sure, right.
The toughest part of his day may be that a certain piece didn't work the way it was supposed to work, or it wasn't milled quite right.
Right.
And now you look at the cop who comes home, and he may have witnessed a homicide. He may have witnessed or been sent to a bad accident.
Right.
Or a
right.
child abuse. Uh-huh. Or a domestic violence situation, which are always fraught with somebody calls you because something's not right, but then when you say, I'm sorry, you have to come with me, well, then the whole family turns against you.
Sure,
and
sure.
And so that's the totality of where people come from on that situation.
And you definitely don't leave all those situations at the station.
Absolutely not.
It's in your heart, your mind, and you mull over it. It really makes it difficult to have a normal marriage relationship then and parent relationship, because even though your body's there, you're not always there.
Right. And, you know, Milwaukee is a city of about 600,000 with the suburbs, maybe 800,000, 900,000. But I cannot tell you how many times I have run into somebody who I had arrested.
Oh.
Off duty. And I had a strong dislike for drug dealers. And I just, God kept putting them in my way.
Wow.
And that's a very uncomfortable feeling if you're out with your daughter.
So, yeah, yeah.
You know, when I started, she was 6.
Okay.
And you run into somebody who you've arrested.
Oh, boy.
You don't know where it's going.
Because they recognize you, too, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so what year was it that you started with the police force?
1983.
And you're not still with them, so how long were you with them?
I was with them for 12 years before I went into the private sector.
Okay. Now, what does that mean, private sector?
I did a lot of consulting with smaller police departments, helping with training. There were, at the time, the advent of some private concerns that have become national concerns that our federal government used to help train people in law enforcement and or military. Well, the advent of it was the PMC, the private military contractor. And so was asked to help with things like building a situation in Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
You know, at the time, offered situations with the rebuilding of the Iraqi police departments.
I see.
Which were actually pretty harrowing when you look back at it.
Yeah, I guess so. So are you still in that form of service then?
No, I've separated from that, and my daily mission is really church and business security since the active shooter situation has become so prevalent.
Well, it's been a very, very needy area. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And we just had a very nice seminar here at Brookside going back about a month where we had about 120 people attend, and, we had, would you like me to name who was all on our panel?
Sure, that's fine.
I mean, we had Sheriff Richard Schmidt. We had Assistant Attorney General, recently retired Roy Cordy, talk about he had been with the Attorney General's office 25 years, and he helped write some of the concealed carry laws, the use of force laws, and teach them to police departments. We had Captain Brian Zalewski, who's one of the most certified and accredited active shooter instructors in the country.
Okay.
And myself. And then we also had John Matter, who was a multiple tour and multiple Purple Heart winner in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we brought this in, and we got very nice reviews. And if that helped one church solidify some situation for themselves to help them with their own security,
right,
it was worth it.
So, is this what you are doing with other churches, other cities?
Yes, this is exactly what we're doing.
After the
shooting at the church in Texas,
yes,
last fall.
Right.
We got a number of calls after the shooting, and after every tragedy, we get inquiries. You know, after Parkland, Florida.
Yeah.
You know, we got a number of inquiries, and it's one of those things where, you know, we're a small business. We're trying to help as many folks as we can, as fast as we can.
Wow.
But it's one of those things that I think churches need to know what their options are.
Right, right.
And, you know, if we can help them in any way, you know, we're more than willing to walk them through their building, say, here's your weaknesses, here's your strengths. You know, do you have anybody who even watches the doors? I start out with a basic sort of situation like we had in our country after 9/11. You know, you have to kind of start with layers, maybe greeters who know somebody, maybe somebody else watching the lobby, you know, somebody else watching some cameras, yeah, somebody else. And people ask me all the time about arming or not arming, and that's a personal situation and decision. I cannot tell them what's right for them.
Right, right.
But I tell everybody, if they decide to carry, that they should not carry unless they're going to learn their weapon, practice with it, and learn their limitations in the guns, because if they do not do that, they are more of a problem for me.
Oh, okay.
Than the person who's coming in and might be a problem.
No, right, exactly.
And I didn't mean to get off on that tangent, but that's exactly where we are in this world.
You know, we've got folks listening to our broadcast this morning, Bob, that may want to get a hold of your organization and you for their church. Can you give them some contact information? I'm continuing to talk, so then get a piece of paper and pencil and write this down. But since it is such a vitally important area of church ministry, and I'm assuming Christian school ministries and things like that, mission organizations, how could they get in contact with you?
Well, they can certainly call my office if they want to do it the old-fashioned way. My direct line is 262-349-9979. That was 262-349-9979. Or they can email me at bob@applied-tactical-training-academy.com. So it was bob@applied-tactical-training-academy.com, all spelled out.
Okay. And your name is Bob Chapman.
That's right, sir.
All right. So I know that when you first think about things like that a couple of years ago, a lot of churches would say, well, you know, maybe schools, maybe businesses, but yeah, not at a church. Why are churches being targeted?
Well, at the core of a lot of these situations, there is a domestic component.
Okay.
It is an estranged husband or an estranged wife. It is your estranged in-laws. And so that's a very big problem. And they are soft targets for the most part. That's what most people understand.
Because they don't think anybody's going to be armed at church.
Exactly.
Okay. And possibly the religious organization has been a part of the reason for the estrangement. And so they think, fine, I'll just go take my wife out and I'll take out all those down there that are part of what she believes.
Right. When one spouse comes to the Lord and the other doesn't,
uh-huh.
And then there develops a problem of some sort, oftentimes, you know, even going back to being actually on the street, that was the root of a lot of the problems.
I see.
I mean, my first tactical situation was an off-duty cop who went and took his ex-wife out of a church at gunpoint.
Well, folks, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We trust that these words have been instructional and helpful. Till the next time, the Lord bless you in an awesome way.